talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the real life, I'm fighting and fought and died to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man, you walking on right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. With lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. There's a picture here sent to me by Joanna. And it's a mulatto with a curly hair in two great waves coming down either side of her face. Pictured here is Judge Kim Crooks, who is stripping a father of his 7-year-old son, legally mandating the father to refer to his 7-year-old son as a girl, legally mandating the father associate with no one who won't call his 7-year-old son a girl, and to add insult to injury, mandate the father take a class on transgenderism. Does this sound like justice to you? Well, it sure doesn't sound like justice to me. This is part of the insanity here in deep light in the Weimar Republic that is now so much of Western Europe and Canada, you know, and the United States. So much of the absolute insanity. You know, when you can't get sex right, what else are you going to get right? Or, I mean, if you can't get sex right, can you get the more complicated things in life? And there's actually a crowdfunding site to try to save this poor, mixed-up little child. And if you'd like to get that, I'll be glad to send it to you. Email me, paul@paulfromm.com. That's P-A-U-L at P-A-U-L-F-R-O-M-M. .com. James' mother says he's transgender. James is facing chemical castration by hormone therapy in as little as a year. James' father, Jeff Younger, is fighting a massive and expensive court battle to save his son. James' mother tells him that he really is a girl, even though James always presents as a boy with his father, Jeff Younger. James' mother socially transitioned James at school, Pinkerton Elementary in Coppell, Texas. He's known at school by a fake girl's name, Luna. James wears a dress to school. He even uses the girls' restroom. Now, he's only 7 years old. His mother enrolled James in the Genesis Clinic in Dallas, Texas. In less than a year, the clinic can chemically castrate James by hormone therapy. Hormone drugs. And at as early as age 15, the clinic can physically remove James' penis and testicles in a surgical transition. Help James, Father, save James. The final massive trial to save James will be held in October. The legal and day-to-day court costs are huge. Expert witnesses are expensive, up to $4,000 a day. And I know all this just to be true. And this is, bouncing off the wall insanity. But that's what we get with this insane political correctness, this insane madness, what we're seeing is deliberate confusion being spread. And this is actually extremely serious. It's deliberate confusion because when people cannot even get their sex right, when you're confused about that, and confusion is spread, it would appear that this is almost entirely the doing of the mother, who sounds like this seems to be her doing, for whatever twisted reason God only knows. But this is exactly what we have to fight against. With this sort of confusion, people lose the ability to judge more important, greater things. it used to be that, at least, sexuality, people could be reasonably certain about that. But when even that's up for grabs, what are people except just terribly, terribly messed up and confused? And I keep mentioning that this is Weimar because the Weimar Republic was a time of unprecedented, for several centuries, insanity in Germany. Rampant, wild homosexuality, prostitution, child pedophilia, and so on. The one good thing that we can be sure of is that this will not last. Evil cannot continue. So how it will end, I don't know. Anyway, back in late September, there was a meeting, a rally by People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier here in my hometown of Hamilton. It had been quite controversial. The uptown version of the Antifa, these would be the ones with some degree of establishment respectability, tried to have the rally canceled. A person from the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, let's be careful, be sure, anti-hate doesn't mean anti-hate, it means anti-free speech. So somebody from the Canadian Anti-Free Speech Network contacted was printed in the local paper, and that was the Hamilton Spectator, and he urged that the meeting be canceled, not to give Mr. People's Party of Canada a platform, and there of course were, and if it was not canceled, well, there might be protests by Antifa. I think the college actually would have canceled it. That seemed to be their inclination. In fact, they tried they actually demanded more money for security. Although it's actually up to the local police to provide security. I mean, if somebody is threatening violence, ultimately it's up to the local police to prevent them from making good on their threat of violence. the Antifa showed up about 100 strong, and there was a lot of pushing and shoving and cursing. And in one particularly well-recorded incident, which I think really helped convince a lot of people of just what utter thugs and gangsters Antifa is, three young people, I mean people in their 20s and early 30s, were seen blocking an elderly lady trying to push her walker toward the front entrance of Mohawk College. They were blocking her. One actually had his big hoof in front of her, and she did slowly manage to gain entry. Has caused a good deal of outrage, and of course. These people were masked. Now, there's a law in Canada preventing you from wearing a mask, except basically for Halloween and things like that, especially in commission of a crime. That in itself is a crime. Anyway, finally, 3 weeks later, the Hamilton Police Department have made some arrests. Now, this is the report today's TV. From CTV News. Three people who have been charged in connection with a protest last month at an event featuring People's Party of Canada leader Maxime Bernier, including a man from a family whose business was temporarily shut down after protests against his participation. The Al-Sufi family, they're Syrian refugees, but they really repay their adopted country big time, don't they? Were forced to close this Toronto restaurant after they said they received hundreds of death threats over their son Alaa Al-Sufi's participation in the rally. I strongly doubt they received hundreds of death threats. My guess, and I cannot prove this, is if there were any death threats, they made them themselves, or alternatively, there were very few death threats. But you know, a little bit of drama is always called for in these cases. I'm highly, highly skeptical of this. Well, the popular Syrian refugee Sufis reopened days later, but is temporarily under different management while the family takes a break from the business. Yeah, do you believe that? Now, this is the official story. The family, well, they were just so traumatized by receiving threats. Don't forget, these people allegedly were refugees from Syria, one of the most violent places on earth. And wait a sec, because they received a few threats, allegedly, they closed the restaurant. Well, then a big prominent Muslim businessman came forth and volunteered management services. So what, he'll manage the restaurant while the Sufis take a vacation? I don't know. A lot of this. You really wanted to take this with not just a grain of salt. You want to take it with a barrel of salt. It really beggars the imagination. But okay, that's the official story. The story continues. At the time, Hussam al-Sufi said his son had taken part in demonstrations trying to support marginalized people and had made mistakes, for which he learned this lesson the hard way. In other words, assuming there were any phone calls to the restaurant, Canadians were fed up with the gall of these people. Granted refugee status, although it turned out actually they hadn't exactly come from Syria, they'd been in one of the Gulf states. So how did they even get refugee status in Canada? Who knows? But how do they repay us? Well, their son goes out demonstrating, rioting, trying to prevent Canadians from exercising their free speech. That's one of the problems you see bringing in people from countries that don't have our traditions. They don't get it. Anyway. They've got the pattern down right. He was just trying to support marginalized people. Well, who's marginalized at the Maxime Bernier rally in Toronto? In Hamilton. Well, no, nobody's marginalized. The only people they were trying to marginalize was a poor old lady and her husband who wanted to get in to hear what Maxime Bernier had to say. It always sounds good. Oh, he was just trying to protect the marginalized. No, he wasn't. He is an anti-free speech thug. Police say about 100 protesters were outside the building at Mohawk College on September 29th. And the reference, of course, the elderly woman being prevented from entering. The police say 4 people were arrested and released unconditionally that night. Investigators reviewed hours of footage and they identified suspects in connection to several offenses. They arrested one person on Tuesday and 2 more turned themselves in today. Ala al-Sufi, 27, from Toronto, is charged with 2 counts of intimidation, 2 disguised with intent, and 1 of causing a disturbance. So the guy's a thug wearing a mask. Thank heavens the police have finally charged him. Now, Hamilton is about 40 miles away from Toronto. So, al-Sufi, or Ala al-Sufi, comes all the way from Toronto to Hamilton. 33-year-old Kevin Metcalf of Toronto is charged with obstructing police. He came all the way from Toronto. And Maximiliano Herrera, a 30-year-old from Toronto, is charged with intimidation and assault. Apparently police are still investigating further possible charges. The CBC, that's Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, mentions a 4th person. It may be just come out slightly later. And they've announced that a 4th person, 23-year-old Victoria Wojciechowska, was also arrested. She was charged with theft under $500,000 and wearing a disguise with intent. Now, these are the thugs that were there. And police are still searching for several other people that were involved. Well, good on the police for finally taking this seriously and charging these people. Bad news from the poor, pathetic Germany. Did you know we're still at war? Yeah, you didn't know that. Yeah, we're still at war with National Socialist Germany. We never signed a peace treaty. There's been no peace treaty signed. Technically, the war's still on. And you get that impression. I mean, you actually think Adolf Hitler was alive and well and a major threat to people with the amount of anti-National Socialist propaganda you see. You know, that Hitler's a danger and Nazism this and Nazism that and so on. You wonder, where are these people? Well, actually, you see, no peace treaty was ever concluded. So, Germany, as Ernst Jünger used to say, is really a vassal state. And their government operates not in the interests of Germans, but in the interests of foreign powers. So anyway, what's happening there is prosecutor appeals. That's the prosecutor in the Alfred Schaefer case. Now, Alfred was a is a brave, actually a German-born, but he's a Canadian. He was a Canadian, so he is a Canadian. He's a German-born, and he returned to Germany to live as a German citizen. He's a dual citizen, and he's been outspoken in his belief that the so-called Holocaust did not happen. In fact, he often says to people, you don't really still believe that, do you? And he's been a very effective proponent of those ideas. Anyway, Alfred was ordered jailed for 38 months back in June of last year. Well, because he had spoken out defending his views in court. And see, that this is the weird thing. That's an additional crime. You see, if he tried to explain through videos how he came to the beliefs he had, with the suggestion that these beliefs were not evil or irrational, that in fact he had good reason to hold the beliefs he did, questioning the Hollywood version of World War II. Anyway, he was warned by the judge several times that was not permitted. That you compound your offense if you state, well, I have reason to believe what I'm saying here. Anyway, well, he was sentenced to an additional 18 months by the judge, by the Court of Appeals. Well, now the prosecutor is back, wants to go back to court to ask for even more. And this is a report from Alfred's sister, his brave sister Monica, who served herself 10 months in German jail as a political prisoner last year for her little 6-minute video, which she put out in June of 2016. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. And Monica writes, if you think that it is bizarre that a person can be jailed for the things that they say in their defense in court for an alleged speech crime, hold on tight. This will blow your socks off. The Muppet Show continues. Alfred, that's her brother, Alfred Schaefer, will be back in court on November 12th of this year to face his inquisitors. Why? The 18 months sentence, which is in addition to the 38 months he's already serving, is not enough, according to the prosecution. Almost 1 year ago, on the 26th of October 2018, the final day of the Schaefer sibling trial in Germany, the judge sentenced Monica to 10 months time served prison, and her brother Alfred to 38 months prison. This was not for theft, vandalism, murder, or rape. No, this was having wrong think about our history. It was for making videos, educating the public about what is really going on in the world. And in my case, for an apology to my mother and my sorry mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust video. During the 20-day trial, there were several instances where the judge interrupted Alfred to warn him that the things he was saying could lead to additional charges. Alfred waved those warnings off and said, "You want to lock me up for 6 million years anyway, so I'll continue because I'm simply speaking the truth." Alfred is a truth seeker. He started off seeking truth about 9/11, and upon having his eyes open on the crock of lies that were involved in the establishment story of 9/11, he began to question other so-called truths, and concluded that we had not been told the truth about the so-called Holocaust. On August 8, 2019, those additional charges led to the added sentence of 18 months. Both sides are appealing. The prosecutor has asked for 24 months at the time and is not satisfied with 18 months. If they get their 24 months, the total sentence will be over 5 years, all for speaking peacefully. Yeah, don't ever let them tell you Germany is a democratic country. It's not. And for people of my parents' generation who, in their fond naivety, thought, well, we're going to fight for freedom for those Europeans, particularly those Germans, so that they can have such good things as freedom of speech. Well, this is a big hee-haw. you wasted your youth, I'm afraid, in vain. That's not what you got. You got instead a tyranny. Meanwhile, there are countless examples of rape and or assault by new Germans, that's the immigrants, Angela Merkel's invaders, which garner far lighter sentences than that because they don't understand our culture, the judges say. So if you challenge, if you are a thinker and you challenge the prevailing ethos, the new religion of Holocaust, you go to jail. If you're a foreigner and you don't understand that raping a German girl is wrong, well, you know, give you a lighter sentence. It's madness. When history comes to you enforced by law, you can count on one thing being for certain. It's a lie. Why else would they legislate a story into existence? Can it get any more brazen than when they make it impossible to make a defense in court? You know, that was really the old Soviet system. You really couldn't challenge in court. In court, you couldn't argue truth of what you've done, because that's compounding the crime. All you could do is to say you were deluded, beg for mercy, and he still got shot. can I get any more brazen than when they make it impossible to make a defense in court, asks Monica, to explain how you reach your conclusions or to bring forth evidence which supports your conclusions? How can any thinking person not see the Orwellian tyranny in this? Words elude me. Through all this, Alfred remains in good spirits. His letters radiate triumph. I know from experience that when you have truth on your side, it's easy to keep your spirits up and to feel free in your heart and mind and soul, even when physically in prison. It also helps immensely to know that we're not alone. Our enemies try their best, though, through their psychological warfare, to make us think we are lone nutcases when nothing is further from the truth. Just a reminder, and she says, the cards and letters are immensely appreciated by political prisoners like Alfred, and she gives the address. And you can send a postcard or a letter to Alfred, and I'm not going to read the address because it's a little complicated, but please, go on the CAFE website. That's cafe.nfshost.com. And that's CAFE, stands for Canadian Association for Free Expression. And the address is there. All it takes is an overseas stamp. Send a postcard or send a letter. Try not to deeply discuss politics. They might not give it to him. But just say, you know, we're thinking about you at this, you know, whatever season, Halloween. We hope you'll soon be free. You know, phrase it your own way. And hey, get some friends to sign it. It is all, Monica tries to allude to this, but it's almost impossible to overemphasize how important these expressions of support are. Political prisoners really appreciate this. You see, most prisoners in jail, and I don't mean to generalize, but are losers. I mean, the cops aren't always the smartest. So who ends up in jail? Well, people that aren't the smartest themselves. I know that's not true in every case, but okay. So many of the people in jail are life's losers. They may not have a wife or girlfriend or anybody close to them, or the people they have been close to them have given up on them. That's not true in every case, of course, but For many, they're alone, or almost alone. So many do not receive much in the way of correspondence, and many come from the lower end of society, and writing is not necessarily a big thing with their family and friends. So people notice when a man, with a political prisoner like Monica Schaefer or now her brother Alfred, get letters. What's going on here? These people are important, and they realize, and they must realize, not just the prisoners, that the lesson is not primarily for them, but the guards and the system, that these people are not forgotten. They are, in the words of an Irish rebel song, the men and women behind the wire. They're our people, and they're being held unjustly. Now, we often face the problem, well, what can I do about it? There's nothing I can do. Well, that's not quite true. There are things you can do, and one thing doesn't cost you much. It is simply to write a letter. Let them know that you care. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Interesting response to Monday night's election in Canada. And a instant poll found out that most people are not very happy with the results. It's not just that perhaps, well, in the case of almost 70% of Canadians who voted, the party they supported did not win. Well, technically speaking, nobody won. The ruling Liberals were reduced to minority status. They have the most seats of any party, so they have the right to form a government. They'll either have to form a minority government, trying to make a deal with one or another of the political parties, or they will have to govern on a what's called an ad hoc basis, vote by vote, hoping to be able to cobble together enough support to pass their legislation. Anyway, so what do Canadians think about this? Justin Trudeau's Liberals won the most seats Monday night, grabbing 157 of 338, allowing them to form a minority government. But winning a plurality of seats doesn't mean the party has the backing of most of the country. In terms of popular vote, the Conservatives had 34.4% of the vote share, and the Liberals trailed them with 33.1% of the vote, a low for any government in Canadians' history. So the Liberals had the support of only one-third of the people who cast a ballot. They actually had fewer votes than the Conservatives, but they happened to be more strategically located. And you might wonder, well, how can that be? Well, Conservatives were winning seats in Alberta with 80% of the vote, so they, but they might not have quite as many votes in certain other parts of the country. A total of 150,177 people voted for the Conservative Party of Canada. That's 238,589 more votes than the Liberals got. But the Conservatives finished with just 121 seats. The Liberals had 57. A Yahoo Canada poll found 71% of readers aren't satisfied with the results. It just didn't look right to a lot of Canadians. With no party holding the support of most Canadians and the winning party not leading the popular vote, Canadians are being dissatisfied. That shouldn't come as a surprise. Canada's electoral system is first past the post, with races occurring within the 338 ridings across the country. Popular vote doesn't always reflect the seat count, and that's a reality in the system. If we did choose our leaders based on share of the popular vote, the legislature would look different following the 2019 election. You know, during the 2015 election, Justin Trudeau talked a lot about changing our system to a proportional representation one. He sniffed around it a bit, and in the end, about a year and a half into the mandate, dropped the idea. I'll tell you why. It was finally pointed out to him that under a system like that, right-wingers, populists, could actually send people to Parliament. Well, can't have that. You can't have that. In other words, you can't have the voice of some Canadians heard in Parliament. Radio Canada graphic shows what this would mean if the federal election had been held under proportional representation. There'd be 112 seats for the Liberals. They would lose 45. 117 seats for the Conservatives. They would lose 4. 54 seats for the Socialist and New Democratic Party. They'd gain 30. 26 seats for the Bloc. They'd lose 6. And 6 seats for the... 22 seats for the Green Party. They would gain 19. And... 6 seats for the people, for the People's Party of Canada, they would gain, they didn't get a single seat. They won almost 300,000 votes, but they didn't win a single seat. What a parliament like that would mean is that there would have to be either a coalition government or there would have to be compromises, legislation by legislation. No party would have a majority, but there would be the seats would more accurately or more closely represent the will of the voters. I find that fascinating. Another good thing that has happened in the past 24 hours is there's been a decision in the Jonathan Yaniv case. Now, Jonathan, some time ago, decided he was not Jonathan, but was in fact Jessica. So he puts himself forth as a transgender But as he will tell you, and tells all who listen, he still has a penis. So he feels like a woman, but he has a penis. Okay. Whatever. And indeed, it might be just a mental illness or weirdness. But he decided to try to make something of it. Anyway, he brought a complaint to the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal. And they, I think, largely because of how notorious this case had become, they ruled against him. LifeSite News reports, the British Columbia Human Rights Tribunal ruled against transgender activist Jonathan Jessica Yaniv, who had made a formal discrimination complaint, against a number of female beauty technicians for refusing to wax his genitals on the premise that a woman, that as a woman, he was entitled to be serviced by them. The court ruled that the aestheticians who work from home have a right to refuse to handle male genitalia against their will. That they shouldn't have. He may pretend he's a woman, he may think he's a woman, but he has a penis, and they who perform the what's it called Brazilian wax job on women, that's removing pubic hair, cannot be compelled to do it on a man, unless they announce that they're prepared to do anybody. Human rights legislation does not require a service provider to wax the type of genitals they're not trained for and have not consented to wax, the decision stated. The decision further found that Yaniv engaged in improper conduct, which he did, filed complaints for improper purposes, and that Yaniv's testimony was disingenuous and self-serving. Nice way of saying the dude lied. Well, okay, didn't tell the truth. The tribunal finally noted that Yaniv was evasive and argumentative and contradicted himself while giving evidence. It actually says contradicted herself. That's the judgment. And Lifeside News writes sick after that. That is thus. That is what the judgment says, but it's nonsensical. What would you call a creature with a penis? Born a male? I think call him a male, wouldn't you? Yeah. The trans activist who calls himself a proud lesbian made international headlines this summer for his discrimination complaints launched against 16 beauticians for refusing to wax his male genitals. The Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms, which supported the women who were charged by him. Jessica Yaniv identifies as a woman but possesses male genitalia. In March 2018, Yaniv approached the aestheticians, about 20 of them, and requested a Brazilian wax to remove pubic hair from the groin area. When the aestheticians, three agreed to, but the rest refused. When they refused to provide the requested service due to lack of personal comfort, safety concerns, a lack of training, and or religious objections, Yanni filed complaints against them alleging discrimination based on gender identity and gender expression. In total, Yanni filed 15 complaints against various aestheticians in the Vancouver area, seeking as much as $15,000 in damages from each aesthetician. This is a money-making scam. Yaniv made numerous public comments against immigrants. At the hearings, Yaniv contended that immigrants use their religion to discriminate against trans people because they refuse to wax the male genitals of those who identify as women. And I see, of course, that this damaged his case in the ultra-politically correct world. Whom do you side with? Do you side with mostly immigrant women who have been subject to some nasty comments by Mr. Yaniv, or do you side with the transgender creature who has a male genitalia but wants to be treated like a woman? Well, in this case, he lost. The Justice Center represented a Blue Heaven Beauty Lounge and its owner, Sandeep Banipal. She's a Sikh. Miss Banipal testified that she was not trained to wax male genitals and that it's not something I'm comfortable with. Well, that's understandable. The Justice Center also represented Sukhi Hihar Gill, she's also a Sikh, who was forced to close her business due to the complaint against her. Miss Gill, also practicing adherent of the Sikh religion, provided waxing services only to female clients, attending alone at her client's home. She explained in her response to Yanni's complaint against her that it's contrary to my faith to provide waxing services to a biological male. Yanni had requested that Gill attended Yanni's personal residence to provide arm and leg waxing services. Finally, the Justice Center represented Marcia Carnava, a third aesthetician who was suspicious about Yanni's behavior in advance of the appointment and canceled it as a precaution. Miss Carnava also does not have the necessary training, tools, or comfort level to perform waxing services on male genitalia. She closed her aesthetic business following the complaint against her. Some of these women were driven out of their employment by this freak. The Justice System Center noted that an expert in genital waxing testified at the hearing, informing the tribunal that aestheticians who are not trained in male genital waxing should not attempt to wax a penis and scrotum due to the risk of serious injury to the customer. Actually, it would be funny if one of them had and burned his you-know-what. The expert also testified that the necessary prolonged manipulation of a client's penis and scrotum often results in sexual arousal and a request for sexual services. Yeah. And these women, they're not prostitutes. They didn't want to do this. The expert said that her salon's refusal to provide sexual services had resulted in name-calling, intimidation, and customer requests to masturbate in her salon. The Justice Center noted that most of the women who were targets of Yanni's complaint work out of their own home, or are of immigrant background, and small children with them in the house during the day. A publication ban had identified Yaniv only as J.Y. for most of the proceedings until the esthetician successfully brought an application to have it lifted. The tribunal ordered costs against Yaniv in the amount of $2,000 payable to the two his two victims. A small but important victory for common sense. Well, this is Paul Plum. You're on the fighting side. I'm going to take my musical break right now. I'm going to play a few tunes by a man who had a very famous father, and but has also managed to shine in his own light and efforts. And this is Hank Williams Jr. This is Paul Plum, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Yeah.
ready and we poured in the blood of the Tennessee mare and the Tennessee stud. Now we got a little baby on the cabin floor, a little horse coat playing around the door. And I love the girl with the golden hair and the Tennessee stud loved the Tennessee mare. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun and his eyes were green.
it's Hank Williams Jr. and this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on ResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon, all of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada. Let me play forever.
From Britain's shore, would the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless.